Hey everybody, and welcome to Nintendo World Report's Connectivity, episode 267. I'm your host, Neil Ronahan, and joining me today is one of the first ever winners in Pac-Man 99, John Raritan. How are you doing tonight?
Great. I did it by what I assume is cheating and something that I have to imagine they would patch, because it was too easy.
Yeah, so we are recording this roughly a half an hour after the new replacement for Super Mario 35. It kind of feels like it is.
Yeah.
Available on Nintendo Switch Online to subscribers is Pac-Man 99, which is taking that same formula. I believe it's even developed by Eureka, who did Tetris 99 and I think Mario 35 as well, and have been working with Nintendo for a while. They did a lot of the 3D classics and I think some Dr. Mario games in the past 10 years or so. But Pac-Man 99 is now available on Nintendo Switch. If you have, you know, a Switch Online subscription, it is, you know, it's a Pac-Man Battle Royale. It seems really cool because it seems to borrow a little bit of a note from Championship Edition, which is a super good, fun version of Pac-Man that kind of made it like a more modern version of the game. But it does have absolutely no explanation of how the game works.
No, when you boot it up. Not at all.
Like, you boot it up and it's just like, have fun, kids. So John and I just hopped into it and played. And John wound up winning. But here's what we kind of put together as we were like texting as we were playing the game, is that the actual pellets don't seem to actually do anything as far as we can tell. So John, yeah, why don't you share with us your game winning strat?
I guess if you haven't looked at it yet, it's just Pac-Man. You've got ghosts running around, you've got power pellets in the corner, you've got a bunch of little pellets, which like Neil said, we don't think do anything. And then there's fruit that occasionally spawns in the middle that also resets the board when you get it. And, you know, which means you get new power pellets in the corners.
Yeah.
You can stack ghosts into trains by getting these little ghost icons along the edge of the map.
Which they show up when you get a fruit to kind of reset the board. They'll show up in those kind of the two connecting paths from the top to the bottom.
Yes. And anytime you eat a ghost, it sends
A jammer Pac-Man, we realized.
Which is like an outline of a Pac-Man to the other players. And if it runs into them, it causes them to slow down. And sometimes in the late game, it sends a red jammer Pac-Man, which will actually kill them. The jammer Pac-Mans will disappear if they run into you, slowing you down, or if you get a power pellet. The red jammer Pac-Men only disappear if you get a fruit. So all this to say that after me and Neil realized that getting the pellets doesn't matter, like clearing the board doesn't seem to do anything because that fruit to reset it seems to just be on a timer.
I will say they do track how many times you get full board clears in like the stats section, but I still,
which I guess is, you know, if anything, that's nice for non-winners to have those stats to feel good about. But here's the thing. If you just camp your Pac-Man next to a power pellet and wait while everyone else dies, and then like once a ghost gets near you, you get the power pellet, get out of there. While you're getting away, going to another power pellet, you go ahead and stack up a ghost for next time with the little ghost stacky things. You go and hang out by another power pellet, wait until a ghost gets near you, get that one, clear out that train of ghosts you just made, and go to the next power pellet, hopefully starting a new train on the way. And you just slowly keep doing this. And by the time you have like one power pellet left, pretty much guaranteed that there will be fruit there. This also pretty much makes the jammer Pac-Man irrelevant because you're staying still. So it doesn't matter if they want to slow you down. And ideally you position yourself like literally right next to the power pellet.
Yeah. So when a ghost gets nearby, you can just,
you just pick it up and you go, and then you go to the next one. You don't get greedy. If you can get some ghosts on your way to the next one, great. If you only get one ghost, no big deal, because, like, you got nowhere to be.
It's just survival.
Yep, and you just play it like that. And so my last game before we started, I figured, well, I'll try this strategy. Surely there has to be something to keep me from doing this, because it seems way too easy. But no, I won. And I assume they'll do something to keep people from doing that. Maybe, Maybe something where like you can target people who are staying still or something. But even then, when you target people, it just sends Jammer Pac-Man at them, which don't hurt you when you stay still. So
seems like there might be some holes in this game.
Yeah. But my initial impressions of this are, I think it's fun. And maybe we'll find as people play more of this and develop strategies, maybe we'll find new depth to it. But the initial impression is that it's nowhere near the depth of Mario 35.
And it seems like, I feel like, in, you know, this does happen in Tetris 99, where like people just drop like flies early on. And maybe it's to the strengths of Pac-Man, but I feel like Pac-Man's the game that it's one-hit death. So it's way easier to just be like, oh, I'm out.
Yeah. Well, and especially the Pro Controller's illustrious D-pad, there were so many times where I'd be going back and forth across a hallway I wanted to go into, but I just couldn't get the D-pad to register the direction I needed to go at the right time. So that's a problem. And I think most of my deaths were just me bouncing back and forth in front of a hallway, not being able to get in time.
Right before my last game, I found out that there is an option that you can, by default, you cannot control with the analog stick.
Which you would think is how you would want it. Like in any other, on any other controller, that's how you would want it to work.
It's a regular reminder of how disappointed I am. The D-pad on the Switch, both Pro Controller and Joy-Con, it's just awful.
Mm-hmm.
But cool game. We'll see how it develops. I know there are some concerning things that I believe there is a DLC pack that is $30 to unlock everything, or you can get individual packs. I didn't look too deep into what all of it was. There's a bunch of themes, which actually, I will say the themes seem pretty cool, because it's different, you know, Namco arcade games. Like, I know, like, there's a Tower of Juraga skin, there's a Xevious skin, and it seems like it like completely remaps what the board and maybe even the ghosts look like. I know, like, the character that you're controlling will change with it. And that's pretty neat. I don't know if it's, you know, who knows if it's worth all the money. And I know there is some consternation in that in Tetris 99, it came post-launch, but you could do friend matches. It was free to do friend matches. For this, you have to buy the DLC to be able to play friend matches or any other modes there. It seemed like there was an endless mode and some other pack modes that you could get through all this DLC. So, you know, it is a free-to-play game on Nintendo Switch Online, but it seems like it's almost a little bit of like, here's a free trial of a full game, which I guess like Tetris 99 technically also did, but it seems like
Tetris 99, it when it came out though, that stuff, if I remember right, when it came out, it was what it was, and then they added that stuff later.
Yeah, I forget if they announced that there was, because there was like a season pass, it was like the big block DLC or something. I think there were two packs. I don't think that was announced when it was first came out, because it came out after a direct, if memory serves correctly. And those things came later, and those were mostly offline modes. And that seems like some of what's in Pac-Man 99, but it does seem a little bit more insidious than how Tetris 99 and even Mario 35 was positioned.
In all fairness, Mario 35 never even had the option to play with friends.
Yep.
And the only reason that any of us managed to play with friends was during the final hours of the game's life, when the servers were so dry that you could literally just time when you joined the game, and we were playing with all, like, three different staff members and a few people who were watching a stream. So, I mean, the ability to play with friends, I wouldn't say it's, like, a precedent or anything for these. Yes, Tetris 99 had it, but Mario 35 never got it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'll keep playing it. I feel like hopefully they do patch what feels like a very easy way to win, because I guess if everyone starts doing it.
I mean, now you're making me nervous. Like, I need to do this strategy while we play so I can just get some easy wins under my belt.
It's like once people started snaking in Mario Kart DS.
Yeah.
Like, then it's like, well, now everybody has to do it. Otherwise, you're just going to lose.
So, yeah, that's Pac-Man 99. That's out. That's your Nintendo news for the week. Hopefully not the month. it's been a little quiet, fellas.
Uh-huh.
Technically, Nintendo didn't even publish this game, so the last thing they published was Bravely Default 2 in late February. That was kind of, wasn't that also like the last substantial news that they had? I guess announcing the Pikmin mobile game happened.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that. It's been a second. When was that big fancy direct they had?
February, a week before.
Okay.
Bravely Default 2.
I mean, it feels like it would still be early to have another direct, but maybe just a little like a news burst.
I think we might get an indie show sometime soon. Like, because they usually do it around GDC and PAX East. Obviously, events don't happen anymore. Well, except for E3, which...
Oh, you're
that
right.
That was news this week, that E3 is back after a year of death.
We were so close. It's like a zombie.
Yeah, we almost murdered E3.
Yeah, we forgot to cut off the head. Yeah. We didn't destroy the brain.
Yep. Yeah, you always go for the head. Come on. Come on, Thor. But E3 is coming back. It's going to be in digital form. From like a Saturday to a Tuesday or something.
It's a...
I understand why, like, you can't do the physical event in LA.
I'm not arguing against that part. Like, I get that part. And I kind of get it for if you're a smaller developer, like, you go to E3 because there are people watching it for Xbox and Nintendo. Sony's not there, but Xbox and Nintendo. So I get getting in on it to get that viewership. But if you are Xbox or Nintendo, why go? Like, why formally be part of this?
Because you're a part of the you pay your dues to the ESA.
But why do you?
That's a good question.
Like, at this point, like, surely Nintendo and Microsoft know that E3 is dying. Like, why are they still a part of this? I don't get it.
I have no answer.
All right, well, that's our E3 news.
Yeah. I mean, but Nintendo's going to be there. It seems likely with a direct. Doug Bowser did tweet saying that, like, I don't know, that, like, he's excited to be a part of E3. Because he's a weirdo.
Yeah. And, I mean, there is name recognition. And, like, and outside of people like us who cover it, I think E3 has a more positive, you know, association in people's minds.
People give a hoot.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess, you know, Nintendo wants people to say, oh, E3, because everybody thinks that's a big deal. Hopefully that means Nintendo has something, because this would be a great opportunity to not show up for E3 if all you have is, you know, the Nintendo Land Luigi's Mansion game or something.
I mean, I did see some people talk about how, like, oh, I guess Zelda's going to be there.
I don't think that's true.
I don't think it's a guarantee. I do think it's a reasonable expectation. Could.
I think I'd be willing, I wouldn't bet a ton of money, but I'd be willing to put a few bucks on it not being there. Especially with Nintendo's recent strategy of, like, we'll tell you the game's coming out, like, 3 weeks before it comes out.
Yeah.
And also, it will only be on the eShop for a couple months, so, like, get it now. That seems to be how they work now.
Yep, so, now that we have E3 to look forward to, I suppose.
Yeah.
Some video games came out this week. I did review Lost Words Beyond the Page. Just super cute platformer. Like, definitely would recommend it if you like, you know, video games are fun.
It's a great pitch.
I wrote a review. It's a cute platformer with a heartwarming story. Yeah, you should read my review on NintendoWorldReport.com. But a game that is more fresh in a mind, because I played that game. The embargo was like a week before it came out. So it's a weirdness of, like, I played this game like 2 weeks ago and read the review and kind of forgot about it.
You've already moved on.
I've moved on to Fantasian, which we'll get to later. But you reviewed Star Wars Republic Commando, which came out on Switch this week. It was a, what, 2005?
Yeah, 2005.
Xbox PC game.
And apparently the Switch is roughly as powerful as the original Xbox based on this port. Republic Commando was a nice looking game when it came out. It was very heavily like Tom Clancy Ghost Recon Rainbow Six and then like Halo inspired. Those were, you know, the big things when it was out. So that was what first person shooters were. And it was a tactical first person shooter. You had a squad to command and all that. It was always a good looking game. It was never like a game that, like, this wasn't Crisis. This wasn't breaking computers or anything, but it looked good for the era. And the Xbox version especially was pretty impressive for that platform. The Switch version, while it is higher resolution, it's not a full 1080. I think it's probably 900, maybe even 720. But it's missing visual features from the Xbox version.
Ugh.
And it's weird because, I mean, you would think that a game that is 16 years old, you ought to probably be able to run it at max settings at like 1080p on a Switch, one would think. Or at the very least, if it's going to have worse graphics, surely it runs at 60 frames per second, but no. Star Wars Rebel Commando on Switch runs, I think it might target 60, maybe, though I'm trying to remember, it might actually be 30, and it has really rough frame rate drops. Like, the frame rate drops that you experience on the original Xbox are all here. So I guess it's like a pretty accurate port as far as preserving the creator's artistic vision, though it is in widescreen now. But even why? Okay, here's another thing that I discovered.
Well, did they originally film it in widescreen, or?
Well, actually,
or was it 4x3 to preserve the artist's vision?
So I think, wait for it, because I was doing the comparison video, and what I realized is when they converted this game to widescreen, because even the PC version, if you get the PC version on Steam right now, it doesn't natively run in widescreen. Because that's not the era that it came out in. So the Switch version and the PS4 version, instead of giving you a wider field of view to the left and to the right, they actually zoomed in to fill the screen.
Oh, God.
So like, your Justice League joke is, like, kind of, like, they cut it, like, if you do just a straight comparison between, like, cinematics, they cut off the top and bottom of the image, like, not of the HUD, but of the actual, like, field of view to fill the screen. So you actually have a worse field of view. Like, I consider Republic Commando to be one of the best Star Wars games. I'd probably give it, like, you know, running, say, on an Xbox Series X, running the original Xbox version on there where it runs beautifully, I would give this game, like, an 8.5 or a 9. Like, I adore this game. But on Switch, this is rough. Like, I mean, it's still a good game at its core, but it's not a good way to play it, and it's arguably worse looking than the worst looking version, which previously was a 2005 original Xbox version.
Yeah, so the Switch can't equal 2001 tech.
Right. It's, and it, you know,
it's frustrating because, yeah, this was a game that I never played before. And, like, when it got announced, you sold me on it. You were like, look at how this is a great game, mm-hmm. great Star Wars game, you know, Clone Wars stuff, although it predates the show and stuff. But I think the show's referenced, I know, because Delta Squad shows up in a later episode.
Delta Squad shows up in Clone Wars, and, like, so much of, I mean, I don't think this has ever been officially confirmed, but the Bad Batch series, those characters are very directly the characters from Delta, from Republic yep. Commando. And even, like, just them calling the droids clankers yep. is from Republic Commando. Like, this game is what set that precedent that the Clone Wars then built off of. So it's a hugely influential Star Wars game. And boy, does this version suck.
Yeah, it's disappointing. Like, maybe, no, I think it came out on all the other platforms. Maybe I'll poke around to see if...
So, interestingly, it came out on PS4. It did not come out on PC or Xbox.
Probably because you can just play the old versions.
And it runs better.
Okay, well, like, let's see. Star Wars Republic Commando Xbox Store.
Putting the original Xbox disc into an Xbox Series X will result in a better remaster.
I can straight up just buy the Xbox game for $10
yeah.
on Xbox.
Yeah, I still have my disc. I just popped it into my Series X, and it's beautiful. Like, there's no loading. It runs in 4K. You get all the visual features that are cut from the Switch version. I will say, I looked at a little bit of the PS4 version the other night, and that version looks good. Like, that version looked like it was running yeah. well. It had the visual features that were cut from the Switch version.
Yeah, maybe that's one that I just pick up on Xbox at some point.
Yeah, it's totally worth playing.
Yeah, happy to see it. You know, it's always great to see games like this show back up. I mean, especially licensed ones, because licensed games usually just fall into the ether.
Yeah.
I know, you know, Monkey's Paw and all, because it seems like Asper, the company that's been doing all these, you know, Jedi Knight and Episode One Racer and everything. Can someone just bring back KOTOR?
Asper's been getting some.
Ask.
I will say, like, I thought Asper's Jedi Knight. I didn't play Jedi Academy, but their Jedi Knight port was fine. They cut out the multiplayer, which they also did in Star Wars Republic Commando, which I think is bad because I know like Jedi Knight's multiplayer was awesome.
Well, so the second one, the Jedi Academy, that has the mm-hmm. multiplayer in it. It's online.
Yes.
Just not with friends.
It doesn't have the multiplayer from Jedi Outcast, though, which was better.
Okay. I never played Jedi Academy back in the day. I did play Jedi Outcast and messed around with the multiplayer a lot.
And I'll give them credit, like, with because they also did the Episode 1 Racer port, which when it came out was also weirdly missing some visual features. Like, it didn't have lens flares and stuff like that. And they wound up going back and fixing that. So, like, it's possible that maybe they were just on a really tight development schedule and forgot to flip a switch to make the game good or something. And I guess I'd be hopeful after the Racer port that maybe they'll revisit this and at least fix some of the performance issues. But yeah, as it is, like, I mean, I still had a good time because it's a great game, but it just felt like I was playing the original Xbox version, not a version in 2021.
Yeah.
But yeah, this might be the first time we've been negative about Star Wars on the show.
Oh, crap. We need to reverse it. I haven't seen a lot of Star Wars. I'm looking forward to the Bad Batch. We'll have probably a Bad Batch episode.
I'm like halfway through the third Alphabet Squadron book. That's ooh, good. I got distracted from the Light of the Jedi again because Alphabet Squadron came out.
Yeah, I actually got distracted from Light of the Jedi I think I might have mentioned it before that I do some like freelance book review stuff that usually takes precedence over the books I want to read for fun. But things related to Nintendo World Report that I will be writing about on stuff for the site very soon. I've been reading two books. One is Itchy Tasty, An Unofficial History of Resident Evil by Alex O'Neill, which is actually like, if you like Resident Evil, it's awesome. Because for people who don't know, like, I've kind of like Alex, you might know him by his CVX Freak. I know, like, I remember hearing him on some old 8-4 Play podcast. I think he interned there or something a long time ago. But he's with Limited Run Games, does stuff with like Brave Wave Music and stuff. But he's also, his net handle of CVX Freak shows that maybe he likes some Resident Evil. But it's basically like game by game, just going through the history of the series. And, you know, he interviewed a lot of the people from, you know, the series history, you know, scoured a lot of the interviews and other stories that are out there over the past, you know, 25, 30 years. And right now I just finished the Resident Evil portion, which is like stuff I'm more familiar with. Cause it's kind of known a little bit more of like, you know, Mikami coming in and doing Goof Troop. And then making Resident Evil as you do. And now it's getting into like Kamiya coming in and stuff like that. And kind of just going through the history of that series, which it's weird because I don't think I'd consider the Resident Evil franchise as something that like, oh, I love it so much. But it's one that I've always kind of been interested to see what they do with.
Well, there's some interesting history in there. Like, the only area I kind of know about is around like the fourth one. But there's definitely some interesting stories there.
Yeah, like, and I mean, like, one, like, RE4 is a friggin' masterpiece. That game's incredible. Oh, yeah. I think RE4 might have finally aged in the past couple years.
It happened.
But, like, it took, like, 15 years before it did. Yeah. Like, I went back and I played it when it came out on Switch and was like, oh, yeah, this doesn't feel as smooth. Or maybe it's because the Wii version's actually the definitive version. I don't know.
It sure is. If they could just, I wonder if there's a mod to let you move while you're aiming.
I feel like that would also like break the game.
I mean, the Wii version already breaks the game. Like the Wii version is, it's so easy to point and click on those zombies' heads on the Wii version.
But yeah, I'll have some kind of written review over Itchy Tasty at some point soon. It's really good though. Like highly recommended if you want some good Resident Evil history in a book form. I'm also, I don't know if there's necessarily an embargo on this, so I will speak very vaguely.
Okay.
But Ask Iwata, words of wisdom from Satoru Iwata, you know, Nintendo's legendary CEO, is the full thing that's on the front of the book. This, like, so this book got, I think it's been out in Japan, I think, for a while, and then it got announced for localization. This one, it comes out on April 13th, so a few days after this episode comes out, but I got an advanced copy of it to read through and, you know, write some thoughts on. I only got it yesterday, so I'm not really that far into it. It's a pretty quick read, but the kind of cool thing about it is that it's all really told from Iwata's perspective. Like, I'm still a little shaky on, like, where all of this came from, because, like, some of it is definitely from, like, Iwata asks. Mm-hmm. But there's other stuff that, like, it feels like he just, like, wrote his own biography. Like, he wrote an autobiography at some point and wrote memoirs and we didn't know.
It could be that he started.
I don't know. They do talk about in the foreword. So this is, like, tied to, like, Itoi. I'm not even going to try the name. But, like, Shigesato Itoi, the Earthbound creator and, like, longtime friend of Iwata, I guess he has some kind of, like, magazine that, like, Iwata would sometimes write stuff for and, like, was, like, would always, like, visit Itoi and stuff like that when he was there. Those are the people who put together this book in Japanese. And I think some of that's taken from things that he wrote for them, as well as Iwata asks and other things that he said. And a lot of it is kind of like stuff you've heard before. Right now, I've kind of gone through like his time at HAL Labs. I'm just getting into the Nintendo stuff, but it is just like interesting, like hearing, you know, through his translated words, him, you know, reflecting on, you know, the decisions that he made. You know, he came on board at HAL Labs, or he was with HAL Labs since the beginning, when it was just a few people in like the early 80s. But when he became president, when they were like super in debt, like a lot of like what made him want to do that, what he did when he was in that position, how he tried to get the company out of that. And it's just that nice reminder of how freaking awesome Iwata was.
Yeah.
I didn't think I'd well up just like reading like people be like, because it's just like kind of written from the perspective of the people who put this book together, where they're like, we miss him. We miss him every day. Hopefully, like, we can, like, sit, like, a lot of this stuff is on the internet, obviously in Japanese, but we wanted to put it into a book because it just seems like a better way to memorialize him, to have this out there. And I'm happy to be able to have this to kind of reflect on, because it is something that, as, you know, we're in that weird spot where we're a fan site, but, like, it's still, like, I mean, at the end of the day, Nintendo's a corporation. And, I mean, depending on how you look at it, all corporations are bad. But, you know, down with capitalism, let's go. But there's something about Iwata at the helm of Nintendo that, like, he did have a side where he was a human, you know, on the whole thing of, you know, on his business card, he's a president. In his mind, he's a developer, and in his heart, he's a gamer. Like, yeah, that is a really good line. But it's not a lie.
And anytime I hear that soundbite, I will well up a little bit.
Yeah. Like, it's a good GDC keynote that he gave with that.
Yeah.
Like, he was an astoundingly smart and caring man. And it's the kind of thing where, like, yeah, it could be like, oh, look, what are those words that he said? It's also like, you know, I can remember the reaction that people had after he passed away. Mm-hmm. Like, there was it outside of maybe some people that probably, I think, wisely shut the hell up.
Yeah.
Because I mean, like, yeah, if we rewound to a couple years before then, I think Iwata is, you know, he was at the helm when the Wii U happened. Like,
but
he wasn't perfect.
He was also the guy cutting his own pay in half when the Wii U happened.
Yeah.
Like,
he did the right thing.
Yeah, he is a very good CEO. Like,
he knew how to navigate both success and failure as a leader of a company, and that's something that's really difficult to do. Not everybody's equipped to do that.
The moment this book got announced, I wasn't even sure what it was. I thought it might just be a compilation of Iwata asks, like, with no editing.
I'm reading it and I'm still confused.
Yeah. And I was like, listen, if that's all it is, I'm buying it. Like, I pre-ordered it immediately. And I kind of forgot that it was coming out until you mentioned getting the review copy. And I was like, oh, sweet.
I'll shout out the beautiful James on Twitter, He's a developer on Pixel Puzzle Makeout League, a very good dating sim Picross game. He tweeted something about, like, can't wait to read that book and cry. And I'm like, oh my God, it's out next week.
Yeah.
That's what he reminded me about it. But like, yeah, I mean, it's just nice to have that. And I look forward to it. I'm reading a digital copy for the review. I still have a physical copy pre-ordered because I want to put it next to my couple of Nintendo history books that I think are really well written and tell a good story of a company that has some kind of value and meaning to me.
Yeah.
I have my doubts about the current leadership. We'll see what happens. It seems like they just got dealt a trump card. it's the kind of thing where I'll be curious to see. Like, I mean, Furukawa, like, it's not to knock him down anymore. He's the current CEO and president of Nintendo. He got handed a golden ticket. Like, right, he came on the Switch launched. Yep. It was a success. He came on board. I think it was 2018 is when he started. Mm-hmm. I'll be curious to see how he navigates maybe trickier waters. I mean, he kind of already is, because I know one of his first big projects was the theme park. And the theme park, for reasons totally out of his hands, the world basically shutting down. And like that theme park was supposed to be timed to the Olympics happening in Japan. And that is not happening according to plan. Mm-hmm. But I'll be curious. Like we were talking about how Iwata knew how to navigate success and failure. I kind of, you know, look forward, maybe not with like 100% confidence. I look forward to seeing how Furukawa and current Nintendo leadership navigate through trickier waters. Cause so far it's been smooth sailing. Like, you know, Switch is firmly in it prints money territory.
Even 2020 for them would have been a very different year if they didn't just so happen to have Animal Crossing launching at just right time. Like, they lucked out of 2020 because they did, like, very little else happened for them in 2020. Like, 3D All-Stars did well.
I mean, like, Paper Mario did fine. It did, what but else it came wasn't, out?
I mean...
Hyrule Warriors as your holiday game definitely is a choice.
Yeah, but, I mean, imagine 2020 without Animal Crossing.
Yeah.
Like, if they had gone in 2020, like, well, we have Paper Mario and Hyrule Warriors, like, that would have been a very different year.
Yeah, and I mean, it's even the kind of thing that, like, I think 2020 non-COVID, there's, like, maybe 3D World and Mario Golf, and I don't know, there's probably even things that weren't, that we don't know about.
Sure.
There's probably a lot of games that might have hit in 2020 that got pushed back.
They might have had a little bit more of a holiday.
Yeah, like, if you look at the first half of the year, maybe Bravely Default 2, 3D World, even Pokemon Snap. Like Mario Golf or Miitopia would have saved the day.
There you go.
But like that's a lot of Christmas those games, game. Like they could have been 2020 games. Because the one thing with everything with COVID is that we kind of like the full extent of what's happening. I think actually 2021 is going to feel. I think 2021 has felt a lot more of the brunt than 2020 did, because a lot of those games, like you had hiccups. Like you look at like what happened with The Last of Us 2 and Ghost of Tsushima, like. They just had some like hiccups in the final stages. Mm-hmm. Like, but those games were near finished when the pandemic happened. And if you look at a lot of the games that Nintendo released, those games were probably close to finished when the pandemic happened.
Yep.
And it was just like QA and kind of finalizing it. Like 2021 is going to be weird. We've already seen it where a lot of games are getting pushed out because they've been pandemic times for a significant amount of development.
Yeah, and we're seeing games that were in the core of their development during pandemic now, as opposed to almost done. And even stuff like Monster Hunter, where you know that extra story DLC or whatever that they're really adding. An ending. Yeah, like that was probably supposed to be part of the game. I will say I don't mind it not being there, because I am very close to rolling credits on the first Monster Hunter game that I've rolled credits on since the PS2. So you can release unfinished Monster Hunters whenever you want, because they make me feel better myself.
It's the kind of thing where I want to play Monster Hunter, because everybody keeps on talking about how good Rise is. But I still think what's your play count so far?
My play time?
Yeah.
You keep talking, and I'll pull it up.
All right. Yeah, like Monster Hunter is a series that I really enjoy, but it's always such a time sink. And I just feel like with, like right now, just through the nature of the world and having a toddler who can't really leave the house because pandemic and, you know, pregnant wife and everything, I don't have as much game time. So there's a part of me where I'm like, I don't want to dedicate as much time to Monster Hunter, which is a game that in the past is very enjoyable, but also feels like a job. But it sounds like it's really good.
I will also say that I have so far exclusively played it offline because I don't like interacting with other people. And
that would probably be me as well. So you might be like, everybody else is talking about like, I'm playing with my friends. It's incredible. I'm like, I'm probably not going to do that.
Yeah. I just,
not that I don't want to, like, would, like, maybe we'll do a stream of it or something. Like, I've had fun with Monster Hunter Online in the past. It's just that by nature, I am a solitary single player gamer.
So I am 18 hours and 20 minutes in.
Okay, so probably 20, 25-hour single-player content.
Yeah, and I honestly could probably be done already, but I've essentially been, like, the way it works in this one is you have, like, in each quest, every time you unlock a group of quests, it tells you exactly which ones you need to beat before you can move on to the next ones, and then there's a bunch of ones that you don't actually have to beat. But I've just been, since I knew going in, like, okay, they didn't finish the ending, I'm going to take my time. So, like, I've been doing every single quest in every single tier. So, realistically, like, I know Donald in his review said that he got to the end of the single-player content at, like, 15 hours. So, like, I probably could have been around there if I wasn't taking my sweet time. I'm also playing with a bow, which was suggested to me by Matt Zawadniak as easy mode. And, like, holy crap. It makes the game so much easier, and I'm having such a better time. It's making me consider going back to old Monster Hunter games and playing through them with the bow. Just because I'm like, this is infinitely better. I haven't got knocked out yet. I'm 18 hours in, and I haven't died. Like, this is a very different game than I'm used to.
That's also, I played the Insect Glaive when I last played a Monster Hunter game, and a big part of the reason is because I just like vaulting like an asshole throughout the game.
Yeah.
Well, and that's what, like, now, like, everybody can, like, jump, and I'm like, do I want to be the Insect Glaive? Because part of the reason is that I just wanted to be like, all right, like shoot off some of the insects or whatever, get whatever the bonuses were, and then just jump in the air and land on the back of a guy.
Yeah.
That was my strat. I'm not that great at Monster Hunter, but that's not why I'm playing it, for like the fun and experience. I should probably play Rise.
I've said it before, I'm in the weird position with Monster Hunter where I think I might be a hardcore fan because I've been playing these games since the first one on PS2, which I played online on the PS2 because I'm a hardcore gamer. But, like, I've never been good at any of them. And this one is by far, I think, the best Monster Hunter game that's ever come out.
Well, part of the reason why I also have been more turned away from Monster Hunter is because Apple Arcade just decided to launch, like, 30 interesting games on
good
one day.
Segue.
Including Fantasian, which, you know, longtime listeners of the show from all of, like, 2 months ago. Fantasian is, so far, satisfying all of the hype that I had built up for it. That game rules. But before we get deeper into that, I kind of just want to talk about how Apple Arcade as a service is ridiculous. And I guess it's also worth pointing out, like, I don't even own an iPhone. I wound up, it worked out that former NWR contributor Grant Buell was selling his old iPad around the time when my wife and I were talking about like how we should get an iPad. Like, she wanted it to, like, watch, like, movies and stuff in bed and, like, play crossword puzzles and junk, and thought it would also be nice for, like, drawing apps. For me, I just wanted it for Apple Arcade. but it worked out that it wasn't, like, you know, it was overspending to buy a thing just to play a couple games. But we do have an iPad now, and I'm not an iOS user in any other capacity. So this is my only means getting it. If you are interested in joining the Apple Arcade train and you don't have an iPhone, iPads are a way to go. You can also get an Apple TV, I think those are about $100, and every Apple Arcade game is designed to be played with a controller or touch. So like getting an Apple TV and having a controller, I'm pretty sure with Apple TV, I think like Xbox or PlayStation controllers all easily sync with it. I think it uses Bluetooth or whatever. So if you're like, man, I'm missing out on Fantasia or World of Demons or the Choo Choo Rocket game that came out at launch, you can pick up an Apple TV for about $100 or so. I'm reasonably sure. That's what should do. How expensive are Apple TVs for sure? I want to make sure.
I think you're in the right ballpark. There's a couple different generations of them. I don't know if it's compatible with all of them or if you need a certain kind, but
yeah. I think it's about $100. You know, thing you hook up to your TV. Looks like, I don't know, there's some kind of plan for it, but yeah. So like check out Apple Arcade with that if you want to. And you can also like, I don't know, watch Ted Lasso. I've heard that's very good.
You can, you can play a Frogger game from the creators of Star Fox.
Yeah. They have Q Games has two games on Apple Arcade that I have not played.
Yeah. Frogger and Scrappers. And then they just put something out on Stadia, which I've been meaning to use a free trial of Stadia.
Yeah. Pixel Junk Raiders, which we should check that out at some point. Cause that one looks really cool. Like Scrappers and Frogger seem fine, but like Scrappers seems designed around being a multiplayer game. Mm-hmm. And Frogger is one that I keep on trying to be like, hey child, do you want to play this game with me? Because, It seems like it could be fun for you. It's a frog dancing around the road, trying not to die. Like Frogger's probably fun. Frogger games, like you have to do, well, not that much to mess up a Frogger game, but like the basic concept is there.
Right.
Like Crossy Road works for a reason, damn it.
Right. It's just make obstacles.
So the ridiculous Apple Arcade update added more than 30 games, most of which like weren't announced at all. So like Fantasia was like, there were like previews and I think interviews with Sakaguchi that went up. And that was kind of like, it was like coming soon. And I think it was like April 1st or March 31st. I think when it turned April 2nd in Japan, it went live. So you're like, okay, this is going to be coming out everywhere in the next 24 hours or so. And that went out about, I started playing it. I played it some Thursday night last week on April 1st. Went to bed, woke up, and then like went online and saw that like Apple just announced like, we just launched 30 games. And some of the games include, there's an NBA 2K21 arcade edition, which I will say this, it does have like a modified version of like the good like RPG-y mode, but the gameplay kind of sucks. I'm not a big NBA guy, but like I was curious to see what it would be like.
Well, like arcade sports always have the potential to be good.
Well, it's not even an arcade sports. It's like straight up NBA. Like, I mean, obviously graphics toned down a little bit. Yeah, it's not like 2-on-2 basketball. Like, it's straight up 5-on-5 normal ass basketball.
You don't put the word arcade in the title.
Yeah. But it is like a limited version. It's also hilariously like there's no crowd noise. And I think there's no commentary as well. So it's a COVID.
Just you and the ball.
NBA 2K21 COVID edition.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like the Switch version of PGA. No crowds.
Star Trek Legends also came out, which... So did you ever mess around with, like, Star Wars Galaxy of Heroes?
Yeah. I booted it up during one of my rare instances of going, like, maybe I'll play a mobile game, and then you boot it up and you go, oh, right.
Yeah.
Never mind.
So Star Trek Legends is basically that, but with no microtransactions.
Okay.
So, like, it's, you know, you build up a team, you go on, like, missions, there's some wink and nods to Star Trek stuff, like, some light choice elements, and, like, a very basic turn-based battle system. But it's cute. It's the kind of thing that, as I kind of referenced before we started recording, do not get access to Apple Arcade solely for this game. If this game happens to be on a platform that you are already on, you would probably enjoy it because it's got like it's got a lot of winks and nods to Star Trek stuff. Has a lot of different characters from the Pantheon, and like it reminded me a lot of Galaxy of Heroes, which is a game that I wound up playing Star Wars Galaxy of Heroes for like a couple weeks before the microtransaction stuff just turned me off. If this was a Star Wars game, I would probably play it a lot longer. I just don't have as much of a connection to Star Trek.
Sure.
But it's totally fine. There's a Game Loft version of the Oregon Trail that's on this that is like colorful and, okay. and fine. Difficult to mess up the Oregon Trail.
You're right. Yeah.
Some of the other stuff, there's World of Demons, which is just a straight up like brand new Platinum Games game that I've played very little of, but like it's just a full on Platinum action game on Apple Arcade. Like the graphics are great. Like it looks like Okami.
Oh, I'm gonna look up a trailer.
Yeah, like it plays very snappy. Like it's I don't know. I mean, I guess like I expected like the Platinum B team that like came out for like that Turtles game that wasn't that yeah. great. But it doesn't seem like it's that total B team. Like I don't think like it's, you know, this isn't gonna rival Bayonetta or anything, but like I need to get back to it and play more. There's been so many damn games on Apple Arcade that
is
I haven't
it,
really...
Is it self-published?
I think so.
Because I know they've been trying to do more of that. They just announced some like shmup on Switch, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, this looks nice.
Yeah, like it's one that I'll probably go back to, and it might be something that maybe I'll kind of like maybe write something bigger up about this. Like I'll probably write something about some of these Apple Arcade games that came out. What else? Looking at a list, there's a Taiko no Tatsujin game that came out as well, which is it'd be cool that it's there. Aren't really. It weirdly, like I usually like rhythm games. The Taiko no Tatsujin games have never clicked for me.
Are those the drum ones?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then so the two games that have taken up most of my time, one of them is obviously Fantasia. The other one is Clap Hands Golf, which Clap Hands is the developer that has been making Hot Shots Golf, Everybody's Golf on PlayStation for, you know, 20 years at this point. Clap Hands Golf is incredible. It's just a really good arcade golf game that like has, you know, it's got the smart loop of like you have a bunch of challenges that it's like, oh, like do these three holes in a competition as opposed to being like play 18 holes right now. And like there's other challenges as well. You build up a team of characters. It's the kind of thing that like if the story mode in Mario Golf on Switch was just this, I'd be so content because it is like, you're just going kind of from place to place. There's like, you know, quests kind of, I don't know if there's any kind of procedural generation or some kind of randomness to it, but it seems like they do kind of just keep on like being like, all right, like we're going to pick these three holes, link them together. It's not like you're doing like holes 1, 2, and 3 all the time. It'll be like, oh, like 2, 5, and 8. And you're just going through and running through it with your team, building up their level, making them better. And then, like, as you kind of do more matches, then you unlock new characters. You can kind of, you can make your level cap higher for players and unlock different outfits for them as well. And it just kind of keeps adding courses, keeps adding complexity. The controls, I'm playing it on iPad. I sometimes have played it. Like, I have a controller that I have a PS4 controller that I use to just hook up to it. That I played some games like that, but I kind of just like the experience of sitting with it as a tablet. Because I find like the controller sometimes makes it clunky to play the bigger tablet. But the touch controls in this, it's like you kind of touch the screen, then drag back and fling forward. Mm-hmm. It just feels really nice. Like it just works really well. I know the 3-click golf mechanic is usually the staple. It's one that, you know, Hot Shots and Mario Golf have been using for years and years and years.
Yeah.
But I find like the stick flick works totally fine. That's something that's usually done in like the Tiger Woods PGA games. But it's just a super good golf game. And I'll be very content with my arcade golf until Mario Golf comes out in June. But I'm curious to see like how these two are going to stack up, because I could see it where there could be some aspects of Clap Hands Golf that might outdo Mario Golf. I hope not, but I always feel like Nintendo has their way of kind of in, maybe it's almost in the way of like trying to make their game more palpable for everybody. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I feel like they lose the focus on like, oh no, like here's the best version of this game. I feel like the comparison is like the single player in Mario Kart 8.
Yeah.
Versus the single player and Sonic and Sega All-Stars Racing Transformed, which actually kind of reminds me a little bit of how Claphands Golf has their single player mode. But we'll see. There's still like that, you know, not going to prejudge Mario Golf when all we saw was what we saw in the direct the other month. I hope that game slaps.
Yeah, I am really, really hoping that's the Mario Golf game that I can get really into for the first time in a long time.
So the big one on Apple Arcade is of course Fantasian, which is, you know, Hironobu Sakaguchi coming back after all these years. Actually, it was almost on like the anniversary. It was the exact day anniversary of when Final Fantasy VI came out. Is when
it was Fantasian, like the Japanese release date or something.
I believe so.
I saw him tweet about it.
Yeah, yeah. But Fantasian came out, and that's Sakaguchi is the creator of Final Fantasy. Was at Square until early 2000s, and went on did the last story with Nintendo.
What else? His best work.
Yeah, it's a really good game.
It sure is.
I never beat Lost Odyssey, which is on Xbox, playable on Series X. I'll probably go through and I might play that after I play Fantasian. But Fantasian is like it feels like a PS1 RPG is kind of the comparison that I would make, because it does have more of that like that 3D look. If you've seen anything with it, they actually bill it as like the diorama RPG or something, the diorama adventure RPG, because what they did is they physically built the settings that you're going around. And then they kind of like, you know, took pictures or whatever, or did whatever digital photography to then use that as the, you know, these real built environments as the background in game. And then they put, you know, 3D characters and icons and stuff on top of that. And it looks really cool in motion. I think some areas play better than others. Like early on, there's a desert town. I'm like, that looks fine. But then there's a forest that you go to and like it really pops there. And I look forward to kind of just seeing how, you know, seeing the real world elements as you go to different areas throughout that game. Because I'm still pretty early, about 3 hours in. Like I'm just basically left at the first major town. But it's beautiful. The soundtrack, which is from Nobuo Uematsu, who's Final Fantasy composer. It's just a beautiful, excellent soundtrack that I highly recommend. Even if you're not going to play this game, go seek out that soundtrack. Because it's real dang good. And the story is like, it's funny because it just seems like it's combining like everything from those Super Nintendo RPGs.
Are there four warriors who need to unite something about four different elements?
I haven't gotten that far yet. But maybe. But there's definitely like that kind of like future tech taking over the world that really seemed to dominate. I mean, like Final Fantasy VII, how like, you know, the Mako or Mako, I forget how, I always called it Mako. I think it's actually pronounced Mako, as per Final Fantasy VII Remake.
I like Mako better.
Yeah, I do too. That's why I always said it that way. but like how, like, you know, like Mako's choking the planet. Now I forget the stupid name for it. It's like Mysteria or something like that. Something kind of cheesy, but like you're trying to figure out what's going on. You have an amnesiac character is who you're playing. This dude named Leo. And you're trying to find out what's going on with him. There's something with his parents seems to be coming into play. Story seems totally fine. Like, I'm definitely curious to see where it goes. Going around the map, I've been playing it solely on touch. So that is like you kind of point on the screen and it places like a dot that your character will walk to. But something that I really like, and like maybe this is dumb, is that it's, one, everything's really snappy in touch. It was clearly designed for touch controls, but you open up a menu by just kind of swiping right on the screen, and then that will always have a map there that then there's different icons on the map that you can click, and it says move here. So you will still watch your character move there, but like instead of being like, okay, like I'm going to have to like navigate using these touch controls to get there, you can just be like, all right, move there. And it kind of takes out some of the frustration of using touch movement.
Yeah.
And you'll still follow your character. You can still get into battles and stuff. And I found that good for like kind of going through areas that I might've gone through before, or even for the first time, because you can like easily just like be like, oh no, there's like a treasure chest there. Let's tap and go over there instead.
Yeah.
You know, interrupts the path and it's totally fine. The battle system is like, relatively standard turn-based stuff, but it just, it feels really snappy. Like the kind of the big hook here is that, you know, you have regular attacks and special attacks, but the different attacks will have kind of like different ways that they can curve or go through enemies. So like, you know, early on, my character got a sword that had the piercing ability. So I can kind of use the touchscreen to like drag my attack to try to line it up so it attacks one enemy and then pierces through him to the one behind him. There's one character that has magic that curves. So you can kind of like drag it around and set up like, okay, if I do it here at this curvature, instead of just hitting two enemies, I'll hit four. And it's like, that's really neat. Once again, pretty early. Maybe it'll develop into something more. And the money thing about all the, it's all random battles and stuff, is that there's this thing called the dimension. You know, dimension and dungeon put together. Very cheesy. But like, so as you're going through an area, if you have this turned on, instead of going to a random battle, it will send the enemies to the dimension. And that can like build up to, you can have as many as like 30 enemies stored in there. And when you want to, you can click on it and then you will go and fight all of them at once. Oh. Which I have not done a full 30. I think the highest I got was like 18 or 19. And like, it makes it like, it's a pretty challenging battle, but it also like kind of, it makes it so you can kind of explore without the threat of being interrupted by a random battle at all times, but you're not like neglecting experience.
Yeah. Yeah. It seems like it'd be nice. Like if you wanted to, if you found yourself under leveled and needed to just grind for a bit, you could pull up all those enemies you had skipped earlier.
Yeah. And I think there's some kind of bonus. Like if you do like hit, like, you know, go through a lot of them at once. It's really fun. It's really beautiful. I'll either play that or Pac-Man 99 before I go to bed, after we finish recording.
So when you were talking about all like the kind of motion based stuff for the touch controls, when you do play it with a controller, does it give you like a cursor or something? Or
I think so.
Okay.
But yeah, like I think it's the kind of thing like you could probably use the analog stick to like line up your shot. Okay. And I think movement is more just regular movement as opposed to that like touch movement.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, the movement itself reminds me of like the DS Zelda games or Animal Crossing or something where you would touch and drag on the screen.
Yeah. But like, I mean, it's part of the reason why I haven't used a controller is because I just first started playing with the touchscreen and it works really well.
Yeah.
Like it's a thing with like, I'm not anti touch controls. It's just, mm-hmm. You can't put touch controls on something that wasn't made for it.
Yeah. No, Apple Arcade it's been fascinating. So I told Neil before we started recording that I will occasionally port beg from Apple Arcade to Switch, but it's not because I'm like, oh, I'm not going to play on that. I just don't have any Apple devices. But it's been interesting to see like when you take mobile development and put it in this framework of, okay, your game no longer needs to be free to play. It no longer needs to be like 99 cents at most. And now you can just make like a traditional game, but that you play on a phone, how much that's changed what kind of games get made. Like, I mean, we've talked before, like Oceanhorn 2 and Red Out Space.
There's a new Oceanhorn game that came out on it.
Already?
At the start of January, Oceanhorn Chronos Dungeon.
Oh, no, I saw that. Yeah, that one, it's like a top-down, more like Diablo-style thing, right?
Okay, yeah, I think I have a download. I haven't played it. But like, I mean, the lineup on it is nuts. And yeah. I'll call out one game that I did play kind of before all this that came out back in December on it. Alba, a Wildlife Adventure, by Us2 Games. They're like the people who did like Monument Valley, and stuff like that. I'm pretty sure that was them. Yeah, they did Monument Valley, Monument Valley 2, Assemble with Care, which is another very, very good Apple Arcade game. But Alba is coming to Switch. It was announced in the Indie Direct.
I remember the name sounded familiar to me. That must be
so
where from.
What is really cool about Alba is that it is basically Breath of the Wild, but you're like a child on an island. So it's not like you're like fighting enemies. It's like you're walking around with a camera and taking pictures of wildlife and stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's just this very cute, adorable game that nail some of that exploration, the exploration feeling in Breath of the Wild, like almost better than any other game I've seen. But that is a game that I want to play with a controller.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's been cool to see. I'm not sure. Like, I don't know how like the production process works on Apple Arcade. Like if it's like Apple gives them money to put it on Apple Arcade or if it's just like a perfectly normal platform that you release games for, but it's been cool to see the games that are coming out for this thing. Cause a lot of them are like, I mean, Oceanhorn 2 is a really, really good game and like super high production quality.
There's even a lot that's come out on it that like I haven't even gotten to.
Yeah.
Like even like Legend of the Skyfish 2, which the first one of those came out on Switch, which is kind of like the first one's like a janky 2D Zelda kind of style game where it's based around fishing. I've heard the second one's a lot better. That's there. There's a new game from SMG Studio, the people who did Moving Out and what was the other one? Death Squared.
Yeah.
That's supposed to be like a super fun arcade game. There's a new Reigns. Reigns is the game where like it's like Tinder, but you're a king. where like it's basically all these different cards of like choices that you can make in the kingdom, and you swipe left or right to, you know, accept or deny it, and you're basically trying to like please everybody and have them not revolt on you.
Yeah.
This one is you're like a rock band flying through space.
So, the natural progression.
Yes.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm really impressed with Apple Arcade's lineup, and I totally understand people want to play it on whatever platform they can. I do think the unfortunate reality, which is why I'm a little bit of a naysayer for, you know, stuff like Fantasian or Clapham's Golf or maybe even World of Demons being like, oh, definitely going to come to Switch, is that I think it varies from game to game how much Apple sort of invests in them. Like right. You can tell by like that, you know, going back to the launch lineup, like you had stuff like, whatchamacallit, Sayonara Wild Hearts came out day and date on Switch and Apple Arcade. Mm-hmm. There's other games, like there was the Rayman game, the Shantae game. The Shantae game, that came out on Apple Arcade, like a part of it came out first, and then it came out roughly 6 months later, or so. It was like September, and then May was when the full game came out on Switch and other platforms. You had stuff Last Campfire, I think was day and date, Apple Arcade and Switch. Whereas World's End Club, that came out on Apple Arcade last year, and that's coming out on Switch in May. And then there's other games like, I think like Guildlings, what else has been, that Frogger game, there's a Choo Choo Rocket game that seems to be exclusive to Apple Arcade. There are games that just seem like they're exclusive to Apple Arcade. It depends on kind of probably how they were funded, but the contract is. And that's why, like, I find just a little bit of the fallacy of like, oh, that's definitely going to come over. It's like, well, we have games from when this thing started a year and a half ago that have not gone anywhere.
Yeah.
And it might not be as easy as just like, oh, like at this point, it's just going to be able to port it everywhere. It might depend on the contract.
It depends on the contract. It depends on like, let's say that Apple funded the game and doesn't have it under some exclusive contract. Like, that still doesn't necessarily mean that the developer has the money to then port it.
Yeah.
Like, ports aren't free.
Yeah.
Is Apple directly produced? Like, are there games on there published by Apple?
No, a lot of them are self-published. And to answer your question from earlier about Platinum Games, World of Demons is technically published by Platinum Games.
Okay.
Yeah. But I do know, like, I mean, like Apple, obviously there's, by the virtue of it being a subscription service, like there's a transaction happening. It's not like, like with Nintendo, it's like you get your license approval on Switch and you can just put games up even on the regular iOS store. With Apple Arcade, like Apple is paying the developer some amount of money.
Yeah.
I said this on Twitter before that like the case with Fantasian, my understanding is that is not like Fantasian was going to be made anyway, so why not put it on Apple Arcade? Like, I think Fantasian is the case. Like, it's like I gave the comparison of it's like Bayonetta 2.
Yeah.
A lot of people got super mad about Bayonetta 2 being on Wii U, but the reality is that Bayonetta 2 wouldn't have happened unless Nintendo came in and, you know, published it on Wii U. I don't think Fantasian would happen unless Apple came in and was like, hey, Gooch, bring this to Apple Arcade.
First of all, never call me that again. I think it's fair to say that Fantasian is the devil's third of the Apple Arcade.
But so that means it's coming to PC?
Half of it is. Only the multiplayer, and it'll be shut down months.
I forgot that it was only the multiplayer.
And they'll call it something different to avoid name recognition. Apple Arcade is fascinating. I assume that it's probably similar to Game Pass in, you know, the I'm sure it's good for the developers. I would think so. I can't imagine a lot of these people are, and this is not to be negative toward mobile development, but I assume that most people, it wasn't like, you know, cell phones was like their first, like they were like, oh, we really want to put our game out on phones, like screw Switch and Xbox and PlayStation. Phones for us.
It's also like, I feel like people forget that like Apple isn't just a phone company.
That's true. Yeah, that's like, no.
I think you can play these games on Mac.
Yeah, like, that's fair. Yeah, and even, you know, Apple TV is this, I mean, when you're using it in this context, that it's a game console.
Yeah.
So yeah, no,
I'm not saying like Apple TV should replace your Switch. Like, no.
Right.
I'm just saying if it crosses like the line of you're like, okay, this is worth spending $100, $150, $200 or whatever to get the console and a controller to play. You know, Fantasian, World of Demons, Alba, and all these other games. There's a good lineup. Maybe that's worth it for you. Maybe it's not. But I'm super content with Apple Arcade. It's one of those things where like it feels like how it's EA Play, which is confusing because that's also their live event. It used to be called EA Access, and that's kind of how I like to refer to, even though that's an outdated term. But for a while, like EA Access, like their subscription service that was only on Xbox for some reason, that was like the easiest $20 or $30 a year, easiest money I would spend. Because like for me, you have access to a lot of their back catalog. So like I've got Peggle 2 at all times on my Xbox, along with Peggle and Zuma from Xbox Live Arcade, which I played the shit out of. Always got that. And then they have, you know, you can play a free trial of most of their games, except for the Star Wars games for some reason. But of all the sports games. And then like usually I know Madden is the one I pay attention to more, but like Madden comes out in July or August, and then it's put into the EA vault, usually around Super Bowl time in February. So there were some years where I would just kind of play my free trial of Madden a little bit and be like, okay, like I'll play more of this when it's free in February. And like, for an entire year of that, with all the other benefits, would still be half the cost of buying Madden when it came out.
Yeah.
And like that was a really good deal and it worked for me. For other people, that wouldn't have been worth it. And that's kind of how I feel about Apple Arcade, where for me, the $5 a month, or I think it's $50 for the year, that's just totally worth it for me.
And that's, I mean, when you can, and this is not to bash Game Pass because I'm a big fan.
Game Pass also works for me, although I probably don't play Game Pass enough. So it's probably, I'm probably wasting money on that.
And what I was going to say is like the price difference between like Game Pass compared to Apple Arcade is very expensive.
Yeah. Can I forget what it is Game Pass $15 a month? I know
$15 a month, which is assuming you're not an idiot using it to play a $4 Mass Effect game. It's a great deal.
Yeah. But I mean, for that with Game Pass, it's like, I mean, one, I still think it's a great deal if you're actively playing, which that's my thing is that like, I've had moments with Game Pass where I'd play a ton of it. And then like the past month, for example, like I think I booted it up to download that Mass Effect game. And I played some Star Wars Squadrons. That's a good video game, but it's also like, if I think about that, I'm not really buying any other games on Xbox. Yeah. So if I take that, you know, it's basically instead of buying four $60 games, I just have access to a buttload of games digitally.
Yeah. I think it's a good deal. Apple Arcade sounds like a good deal. If I had an Apple product, I'd probably be doing it because all of the Apple Arcade games that have come to Switch that I've played have been fantastic. So, it seems great.
Yeah, is this like our subscription service episode? Because technically, yeah, Pac-Man 99.
I think we've definitely advertised Apple Arcade, especially given that we're a Microsoft-funded podcast.
Yeah.
It's weird that we're talking so much about Apple, but I guess Apple's pretty much out of the computer race at this point. Sorry, Apple fans who haven't figured that out yet. It ended.
It's only people who are just like, I need to have my Mac for artistic abilities.
Yep.
Yeah, it'll so I guess, never. I mean, it depends on what you're doing.
Listen,
what's the better one?
Here's the deep dark secret that Mac doesn't want you to know. There's literally nothing that Mac is better at. I'm sorry, but someone had to tell you. All those programs you're using also run on PC. The PC costs a third of the price, and if you spend as much as you spent on that Mac for a PC, you would have a god computer. So, yeah, sorry. We lost our one Apple Mac fan listener.
Sad to see you go, but... Yep. I mean, we did just talk about how Apple Arcade is great, so.
That's true.
Yeah, maybe we can get you back.
I referred to an Apple TV as a game console. What more do you want?
Well, I think that's going to do it for this week's Connectivity. If you liked what you heard, stick around, subscribe, do all that jazz. If you didn't like what you heard, keep it to yourself. you can follow us on Twitter at ConnectivityNWR. You can email us at connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com. Let us know what Apple Arcade games strike your fancy. And maybe, I don't know, like, what would you want to see Nintendo do with a subscription service that isn't a sham?
This one has two Star Fox games on it, Neil. You shut your mouth.
I guess, I mean, it's once again, if we're talking about value, like, $20 a year for Nintendo Switch Online is fine. It's just that it'd be cool. Like, I would pay more money for something better.
That's a topic for another podcast.
Yeah, maybe we'll save that for when they update something on Nintendo Switch Online besides adding a Namco Bandai game.
Yes.
All right. Talk to y'all later.
Bye.
Bye.